morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here.
Mike Cosentino over here.
And Klaus von Stutterheim on the telephone.
Yes, sir. And we got a special guest today, a real special guest. We're talking about Mark Kelly, candidate for Senate here in Arizona. If you own a television or radio, you have we have seen the ads. So hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about those. We're talking about a gentleman, Mark Edward Kelly, born in 1964, was an engineer, astronaut, U.S. Navy captain. The other thing, he wrote a lot of books. You might want to check some of those out. An unexpected bit in his bio as an author. Welcome, Mark Kelly.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate you guys taking the time here.
We appreciate you coming on the show, too, Mark. Northern Arizonans, because 60% of the population is in Maricopa, and I think another 20% is around Tucson, where you guys live, feels a little left out sometimes. I feel our issues are not as focused on by politicians of either party. And up here in Northern Arizona, our whole economy, everybody's lifestyle, the reason they move here has to do with public lands, the national forests, and national parks. We really need an advocate in Western United States to protect all these things, to increase our support of the Forest Service. What is your take on it? Is this an important issue for you?
Well, yes, absolutely. It is part of our heritage here and our culture. And, you know, I think our public lands are part of what makes Arizona such a great place to live. That's part of our traditions as well. And protecting public lands, you know, I think, you know what that means? It's protecting water and air and outdoor recreation, not only so we can enjoy it, but for, you know, future generations as well. And it's so good for our economy. And you guys in the northern part of the state are so lucky to be so close to the Grand Canyon, which is a very special place for, you know, me and Gabby and my kids. And, you know, I feel, you know, connected to it.
One of the things we're looking for, Mark, is not just a support. We're looking for an advocate, I guess. We're looking for somebody a step further.
So we'll advocate for our public lands, help us to protect our public lands in Northern Arizona.
Hey, that's part of the job of being a U.S. senator, is to be an advocate for your state to the federal government, and that's what I plan to do. And I really care about the environment. I care about the issues that you guys care about. I care about that we have, that our public lands here remain in a condition where they can be enjoyed, not only by Arizonans, but by, you know, folks from other states and other countries. It's an important part of our economy. But we also have to recognize that they can come under threat. Look what happened in Utah a few years back with Grand Staircase and Bears Ear National Monument. I mean, that, you know, is not what anything like what we would want to see happen here. So I'm going to be in the United States Senate, if I'm elected, you know, fighting for and being an advocate for Northern Arizona and outdoor recreation and public lands and making sure our forests are healthy and we don't wind up in situations like we saw this year with burning 800,000 acres in forest fires. So I'll be fighting for our outdoor spaces in the U.S. Senate if I'm successful here in a month.
You know, the segue here, Mark, we're talking to Mark Kelly, candidate for U.S. Senate from Arizona, another Democrat, we might add, that the segue here is I want to ask, and it's a tough question, but mining, is it always a choice between jobs and the environment? I mean, you know, and I know a lot of our listeners are very concerned about mining in the Grand Canyon. The other side seems to be intent on allowing some sort of mining in the Green Canyon. So my question is it always a choice between jobs, mining jobs, and the environment? Is there a way to coexist?
Well, I think it's a couple things are important to recognize. One is that the Grand Canyon is a treasure not only for our state, not only for our country, but for the planet. And we have to take care of it for future generations. And I am in no way in favor of mining uranium anywhere near the Grand Canyon. It could potentially pollute the water supply of the Havasupai. It could affect the tourism economy in the area. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I am not supportive of it. I came out very early, and Leo was vocal about that. We currently have 500 uranium mines that need to be cleaned up, and that's just on the Navajo Nation, and we should focus on that. But, you know, mining is, you know, it's important to the state. It needs to be in the right place, we always should be looking at what are the impacts, you know, how much water needs to be used, what are the pollution impacts of it, but I don't think that should be, it shouldn't be a choice as you articulated.
Thank you. Mining enjoys some sort of special tax, but that's a state issue. So let's move on here. How about climate?
Let me ask you a question before we leave public lands. As you know, Mark, there's a motion, a whole bunch of people who want to sell off the public lands. I assume that you're violently opposed to that and will do everything you can to make sure that doesn't happen, putting words in your mouth.
And obviously this is radio, so it's hard for me to know exactly who I'm talking to. I think that was Klaus.
That's Klaus, yeah. We can't see him either, Mark.
Well, Klaus, so, you know, my opinion on public lands is hard to create new ones. We've got to preserve what we have. I am not in favor of, you know, selling them off for development. I'm hopeful that, you know, 100 years from now, as folks look back to 2020, you know, that we have the same, if not more, public land, and it's healthier, and folks can enjoy it for, you know, future generations. So I'll be in the United States Senate trying to protect them.
I do want to underscore that it's a part of America. It's part, you know, it's a part of our heritage. The whole idea of public lands was unaristocratic, un-European, un-old world. This is new world, and public lands are the coolest thing a lot of people find about America. And so, yeah, definitely, you know, that's why we're spending so much time on it this morning. Let's go ahead and segue into climate change here. We have a current climate in an anti-scientific climate is what I'm getting at. Is Mark Kelly going to be interested in maybe having a committee of scientists and that he will listen to regarding climate in the United States?
Well, so full disclosure, I'm not a scientist, but I've worked as a scientist, you know, in space aboard the space shuttle. I've got a background in engineering. I'm a marine engineer, and I've got a master's degree in aeronautical engineer. And I really care about science and data and facts. And I get really upset with our federal government when they discount science. And I think there should be more scientists and more engineers in government. Not only in Congress, but in, you know, federal government jobs, and we can't discount it. And it gets very frustrating for me when things get politicized and it turns into, like, you know, political questions. What's best for me politically? That's not how I'm going to approach this job. It's one of the reasons why when I announced, and I know this is like more of a, you know, campaign kind of question, but like, I don't take corporate PAC money. I'm going to be making decisions based on what's in the best interest of Arizona, but based on the science behind, you know, subjects. So, we need more folks involved that are, you know, have that kind of background.
Excellent. And we're looking for, early in your administration, we'll be looking for something official when it comes to setting up a science committee or a science a climate advisory group that's sits next to the Oval Office, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, so, you know, and I think it's Steve. So, you know, Steve, I think we're going to get back on track. You know, we've got to have a global strategy of dealing with climate issues and climate change. The issues here in Arizona are very specific to our state. It's going to be mean more heat and more drought, water issues that are going to affect our economy. So we have to address them, and we've got to come up with strategies to move towards more renewable energy and less carbon-based fuel, and less carbon in our atmosphere. Good thing is, we know how to do it. We know what to do. We just got to make the decision to do it. And the good news for Arizona, and even northern Arizona, is that this could be good-paying jobs, a renewable energy economy that can be invented here. The technology can be created here. We can manufacture it here. We can deploy it here. You know, this is good for our future.
Is there anything a senator can do to promote solar? I know the whole solar energy thing is kind of a state thing, here we are in Arizona, and certainly we have Democrats running for Corporation Commission on solar stuff. But is there anything a U.S. senator can do to promote this incredible resource that Arizona has?
A lot can be done in the United States Senate. Just one example. We can extend the investment tax credit for solar energy by another 5 years, and another 5 years after that. Right now, it's a 26% tax credit on residential and commercial solar projects. And it's set to expire, and it shouldn't expire. We should extend it. So that's just one example, but we have to have, you know, strong federal policy, promotes solar energy. And also promotes research and development. That's the thing our country was really good at. We're still really good at it, but we've got to have the resources to do it. And lately, you know, in the last few years, the amount of funds that we put towards research and development and education, you know, have gone down. We've gone in the wrong direction.
I think that's an excellent point. I mean, that was always our strength, innovation and technology and science. We had the great scientific universities of the world here, the great innovators, and we're actually in kind of decline in terms of our relationship and investment in science and development. That seems the one of the most disturbing things, I don't know about Mike and Klaus, of the last 4 years of the Trump administration, is this sidelining of all kinds of scientific and educational information, a disbelief in investment in science and technology and research.
Yeah, I agree. We'll get back to it. I think, with different priorities from the federal government, and we're gonna be, you know, able to invest more in those areas, and we'll be able to compete with our adversaries across the globe. That's what we need, right? We need more. We need to create new industries. And that's what our country has always done, whether it's been in space or aviation, computer chips, machine learning, computing. I mean, just all these industries are generally all created here. We shouldn't abandon that. You know, we need to really double down on it. And I believe we will.
Yes, and then in the legacy of John McCain here, and regardless of what side you're on, one of the things I'm going to say is Mark Kelly's campaign does remind me a little bit of one aspect of certainly of the McCain Maverick approach. Certainly, when I talk to my friends from and relatives from other states, and I say, you know, Kelly, his ads talk about, I don't give a crap about Democrats, Republicans. Oh, you know, this is Arizona. I'm going to talk about Arizona. That's a good ad, Mark. And somewhere in here there's got to be a question. Is that?
Let me just say it's not just an ad. I mean, that's what I think we need. And I looked up to Senator John McCain, not only, you know, as my U.S. senator, but also just as a good guy and a Navy pilot. And when I was a young pilot in the United States Navy, he was one of those. He was the hero. He was the guy we looked up to. There were a couple others, but there was really nobody like him. And later I got to meet him and then got to know him, and I would say even, you know, call him a friend. So I think, and I didn't agree with him on everything, but I really respected him, that he was willing to work hard, to make a difference, to work across the aisle, to get things done, and sometimes make, you know, what were probably, you know, hard choices for him, but the right choice. So I have a lot of respect in him and his family, and I think we lost a lot when we lost him as our U.S. senator.
Klaus, do you have a question for Mark Kelly?
Well, one of the questions, I mean, it goes back to National Forest and so forth. Most of the budget of the Forest Service is now spent in fighting fires, and there's little money left to maintain trails and so forth. The Forest Service needs a serious shot in the arm financially in order to do the things that they're supposed to do. Can you help with that, do you think?
Well, I will take a close look at, what the Forest Service's budget is and what are their priorities and where are they, where are their challenges. But with regards to fighting fires on public lands, they need to have the resources. Forest Service, the firefighters, to do a very challenging job. And I recognize that that's not always the case. And they also have to be able to manage the forests in a way that, does not promote, ignition and then the development of fires. Forest is a very complicated system. There's a lot of things going on and a lot of effects. And, climate is one of them. But, proper forest management is very important as well. And the Forest Service should have the resources to do a difficult job.
Okay, we're going to change gears here and they're going to grind a bit. Let's talk about health care for a second. Single-payer health care, Mark. Where are you on this debate?
Well, you dropped out a little bit, so I didn't get the entire question, but...
Oh. Single-payer health care, which is just... we're trying to get a health care question in here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I got most of it, so... I think, healthcare costs too much in our country. We've got to figure out ways to lower the cost of premiums and deductibles, especially prescription medication. There are a bunch of things that can be done, and I think that are smart and make sense. Public option to compete with private insurance on, where there is little competition. Some of these healthcare exchanges have one insurer. And I think we all realize when there's one supplier of anything, they can kind of control the price. So public option to compete with private insurance is something I will advocate for. I think it's also makes sense to allow folks as they get older to buy into Medicare before they're 65 years old, like maybe at 50, and pay a premium to do it. And that would remove those individuals from the larger insurance market and could bring down the cost for, other folks that are, buying insurance. And then the issue of prescription drugs, I mean, they're just way too expensive, and Medicare is not allowed to negotiate and use their bargaining power to reduce the price of prescription drugs for seniors. And that just doesn't seem right to me. I mean, there's other, the VA is allowed to do it, but Medicare is not. So I'd be an advocate for allowing Medicare to be able to negotiate their prices. And then we need generic patent reform, which would help get generic drugs to market quicker. And there are other things.
Well, we want to thank you for being with us. I particularly like the idea of bringing real American technology and ingenuity to fighting forest fires. It seems that we're fighting forest fires with our hands tied behind our backs, with old technology, with lack of innovation. But we really do appreciate you being with it. You have any final words for people, folks up here in northern Arizona?
Well, I miss coming up there. I mean, like a lot of us, I've been kind of in quarantine here and, you know, trying to be, you know, part of the solution here to make sure we don't spread this virus. And I know my wife, Gabby Giffords, really looks forward to getting back up to northern Arizona as soon as we can. So I look forward to seeing folks. Not sure when that's going to be. But let me also say that, you know, we're good at this, you know, innovation and technology thing, but we're also good at solving other problems. And I'm convinced we're going to solve this pandemic crisis that we're facing right now. We're going to get through this, and we're going to get through it together. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Welcome to the show, folks. That was a pre-recording of an interview we did with Mark Kelly on Friday, October 2nd. So all the news about the Donald Trump irresponsible behavior leading to him getting the disease, all of that has happened since then. As you guys know, the news cycle is just roars along all kinds of different direction. Mike, you want to introduce our guest, because we have a guest in the studio, and I think, God, it's been a month or so since we have anyone in the studio. It's usually just the two of us.
Yes, it's exciting to have a human in here and scary at the same time. But
It is scary, Mike.
As you can see by our little sign here, and I'm sure you've noticed her signs hopefully all over the valley, Donna Michaels, who's we're going to do a little intro here. She's never run for office, but she certainly has held office. So this is her first time running, and I'm sure she's found it perfectly scary and really hard, but because every office pursuer does. But she has a long time history of civic engagement. She lives in the village of Oak Creek. She was born in Alexandria, Virginia. She has a doctorate in public policy, and she first moved to Arizona for the Kids Voting USA, which was a great program that taught young people about how the country's government works. Since moving to the Verde Valley, she's been on the boards of Yavapai College, the Arizona Rural Health Organization, the National Rural Education Association, and other groups. She's active in the community. You see her everywhere. And we're going to talk about her signs, folks. We are going to talk about her signs, because we do have a sign war in the Verde Valley. Randy Garrison is a friend of mine. Donna's running against him. So for these personally, this is a great thing to witness. Donna Michaels, good morning.
Good morning. We accepted the big bucks to put the sign here behind us, but it's a very attractive sign.
Your voice has changed, Donna. It's very good.
All right. So what I wanted to go and ask is, first of all, why are you running for office? Because you've never run before.
Well, firstly, thank you very much. It is indeed great to see human beings somewhere other than behind the screen of your social media, fill in the blank, television or otherwise. I'm delighted to be in studio today with you gentlemen. And it's been, quite some time. I think the past November, when I actually declared, was the last time that I was here for an interview. You know, this is the first office other than I did run for the college board. And so, you know, I filled a vacancy initially and then ran for the seat.
I thought it was an appointment. Okay. No.
So you started way before the COVID ever presented itself, at least in the public in February.
That's right. That's right.
And you made the decision to run. How has that affected your ability to do things? I mean, you're in the studio today, but we closed down for 5 weeks and just did maybe 6 weeks and just did rebroadcast when the virus hit.
Well, so firstly, our listeners should know that, you know, we've taken precautions here this morning. We all came in masked, and I did this little ceremony of antiviral everything, and you guys were very good to put it on and take it, and I appreciate it very much. It's so important for us, and I hope we'll get a chance to talk about it, to do what we should do as a civil society. You mentioned my civic engagement interest, and I'd love to talk about that more, but it's critically important that we take care of each other and ourselves, and one of the ways that we do that, of course, is to wear a mask. And so I came out very early with my statement, if I were a supervisor, I would be encouraging. I think enforcement is a difficult thing, but if you do the education up front, then I'd like to believe that the enforcement is not necessary. We have to model a good behavior that shows a civil society cares for one another. And one of the ways to care, particularly with our demographics here in the Verde Valley, an older population, is to mask up and to go nowhere in public without the mask.
Yeah, I've been masking up since this thing started when I'm in
good
public.
For you.
I see a high level of compliance, at least in Sedona, Donna, without a lot of enforcement of it. There are people occasionally in the supermarkets who are wandering around without masks. Nobody confronts them. We just kind of don't do that kind of thing. But the compliance, I look at some of the supermarket bashes, this is like 90%, 95, even higher.
Certainly is now. I remember when, you know, because I was out shopping for high-risk populations when it first occurred, as I was with the senior center, because we just pivoted when COVID hit. Thank goodness I had such an opportunity to meet with the public for months before it did hit and caused us to pivot our campaign just to address community need. And one of the things we did was go out and collect boxes of cereal and trade for those who were making masks, because you do not want me to be the seamstress and deliver the food to our senior citizens.
Mike is really good at the seamstress.
Yes, absolutely.
Now I know.
Absolutely. My years in the military, showing on all that rank that I made. Listen, I want to jump to the big questions where Donna differs from her opponent. Let's talk about Verde Connect. Let's talk about that road that is approved, as far as I understand, from Highway 260 to the Cornville Road, the McGuireville Road, at the intersection of Beaverhead Flat to 179. Verde Connect has an organized opposition in Camp Verde. Where's Donna Michaels on this?
Well, I haven't varied my position. In fact, yesterday, Mike, I was out on the Verde River right at that Middle Verde, looking at physically, so I could get it in my head, where this spot is, this low water crossing. Mm-hmm. And it's in 600 acres of maybe some of the last riparian area that we have, certainly in the Verde Valley. And a stunning environment to see and be in. And we, in fact, did a little drone flight around it so that we could really take a look at it and get my head around what the implications of it are. You know, I just have to say at this point that there are a lot of conversation. We could take the whole time that we have allotted to talk just about it. The bottom line is this for me, especially now, today, in these uncertain times, and certainly because of that, these unpredictable and uncertain times economically, we simply cannot afford to have an 18% or that's on the jail, or have any kind of a tax implication, which this surely will have, despite the fact that it's a $25 million coupon from the feds for us to build a bridge. Remember that it's to build the bridge and about a mile of road. Then we have to connect the rest of the terrain to that bridge. And I'm scared to death for our community to be able to carry that kind of tax implication burden. There is just no way we should be, as you would say, on the track, betting on the come here to spend that kind of money. And I feel that way, and I know you'll ask about the jail for the same reason.
Well, that's it. Let's go ahead and let's jump right in when you come out against the jail.
I have.
And you can explain that a little more.
I think Klaus has one more follow-up, because Klaus lives right near where the road comes through.
Ah, sure.
Hello, Klaus.
Hey.
Good morning.
The other thing it would change is sleepy, relaxed community into a major highway with an enormous amount of traffic and presumably bring, you know, big box stores. I mean, it would change the entire character of a community. But in that context, the other question I wanted to ask you, people have said about you that, Donna Michael, she's opposed to any development. How would you respond to that?
So what Klaus says, and I know that you don't have the earphones on to hear his question, but he's concerned about the Verde Connect Road. We've only had people opposed to the Verde Connect Road. We've never had anybody in favor of it. And Klaus's question is repeat it again for me, Klaus. That
I said that, you know, people have said about Donna that she's opposed to any development, and how would you respond to that comment?
Klaus says people are saying, Donna, that you're opposed to any development in the Verde, and how do you respond to that?
Anybody that's listened to me knows that's simply not the case. It sure is an easy charge to make, though. It's convenient to be lumped with from the tree huggers to the no growthers to anti anything. And that's certainly not my history, as evidenced in my last development project now some years ago here in Sedona with the CVS. And so growth is inevitable so long as we have a population. And we all know that. Certainly the Verde Valley's been discovered. Yampai County, for that matter, has been discovered. So we're one of the fastest growing areas in the state and the country. And it's how we manage it. It's so important. It's so important that we not approach this as Klaus, a zero-sum game, that it's either going to be growth or no growth. Look. We're able to do both in an appropriate, good stewardship, community plan aligned way. And that's what I've been about for 30 years. I've been involved in putting community plans together, having forums on how do we collaborate across the entire Verde Valley regarding land use matters. And that, of course, is code for development. And so it is not a question of being no growth-er. It is a question of being a good steward in the ways in which we do manage an eye toward community plans and through community plans to guide us in the ways in which we do grow.
Let's go to Mike's question he had just set up before we went to Klaus's. And that question was, what about the jail? I understand you're opposed to the jail. It's very, very much supported in Prescott. They claim that they don't have enough beds to house people safely, particularly with COVID and with handling a number of the mentally ill.
Yeah, I appreciate that question, too. You know, it is not one supported in Prescott. It's really important to know that it's come before the voters not once but twice, and they have voted it down resoundingly in that community. They're very concerned about something that's important to think about. And then I'll get to some statistics that I think are important to discuss. When this was looked at some 20 years ago, you know, the original, we're going to need an expansion. And by the way, we can talk about that road with that in mind, too, those years ago. Prescott had not grown as it is to the point that it is today. And so you have a location that is not conducive for an expansion there. So that's one, apart from the community voting it down. Not once, but twice.
Aren't they talking about building an entirely new jail rather than an expansion? And it's, like you say, it's been in the works for more than 20 years.
Yeah,
they've been trying to build a jail, and the taxpayers, I don't want to pay for it.
Good question, and here's a couple of points on it. You know, it's so interesting to me, and it applies to the Verde Connect, who my opponent has said many, many times. You know, it's been in the books for 30 years. Well, one, my team of researchers have looked extensively at it, and it is nowhere, not even in the original community plan for Camp Verde, ever a road. And in fact, it's conversation about please don't add one more road, because that Middle Verde area is a character area. It's designated as such in order to grow crops and to protect a fragile riparian area. But now let's go to the jail. So Yes, it was voted down, not once, but twice. There's certainly, you're right, Stephen, there's certainly a need to mitigate what you'd have to do with any building that's been standing there that long as a jail. Here's the thing. There's a need to fix and repair. But in these times that we are in today, with a 65 million, and the figure varies depending upon who you're talking to, but let's say $65 million, as the documents suggest that I have read, which is really a loan, we all know that, which equates to an 18% primary property tax, is unthinkable in this time. And for that reason, as well as the data that we know most recently from NAU that did a study that said, you know, the recidivism rate, thanks to Scott Masher and his wonderful diversion program. So let me quickly add that Sheriff Masher has done an extraordinary job. And frankly, I think creating a model for the rest of the country in terms of a paradigm shift. With respect to...
But he supports building the jail, right?
He does. But here's where I differ with him. There's one thing to have money for diversion programs, and it's another thing to build brick and mortar. Our recidivism is down now to 16%, suggesting that the trend is that we need less jail cells, not more. And we also know with diversion programs that we're keeping people from being in the jail. Let's face it, we know the data supports not only nationally but locally. In my conversation with Scott Masher for 2 hours, most of the folks that are in jail, at least 50%, sometimes 60, varies, have a behavioral, mental health, or substance challenge. It is not that they should be the bad guys, which indeed should be locked up. I support that, absolutely. But I do not support, because the data isn't there to support, building more jails. In light of what we are seeing with the success of the diversion component programs that he has led as a visionary for that to occur, and if you think about it, that money then could be reallocated to our frontline workers, like our police officers, our men and women in brown and blue, who serve our communities so well in keeping us safe. Let's get them more cars. Let's get them higher pay. Let's take care of their critical needs and doing their jobs. But to support brick and mortar, I'm not seeing the data that suggests we should.
But isn't it a real boon to have a prison built in a town? I mean, in upstate New York, a whole town thrive on that's their industry. I mean, that would be construction. That would be new hires for the jail, et cetera, et cetera. Why isn't that an important argument or a telling argument?
Well, it's certainly a point of view. To a person, and I've spent a lot of time in Prescott, because, you know, as supervisor, you're not just supervisor of District 3, you're supervisor of Yavapai County. And to a person that I have spoken with the exception of Sheriff Masher, this jail is not wanted there. They do not want their economic engine to be a prison. Let's face it, we all know that our governor has determined that the prison in Florence is going to be closed. And so there is that opportunity. You're right. But we have to think about what is it that the community wants. My job as a supervisor, it's very simple. It's hard to do, but it's very simple. Every community has a right to create its own sense of place. And a supervisor's job is to protect it. And if the citizens of Prescott are saying again and again, we do not want it within our city limits, one. And two, we don't want to be a prison economic engine. That's not who we are. That's not the vision we have for ourselves. As supervisor, I'm going to listen to that.
Now, in Sedona, let me ask you a hard question. In Sedona, people opposed a four-lane road into Sedona. Vast, where it was just before I moved here or just after, and I didn't get involved in the issue and didn't really even research it. But it was a very, very big deal. And the problem is that we do have a terrible traffic problem in Sedona, and it seems that Verde Connect would divert, make it easier to go off the highway, not go through old Cottonwood's traffic lights and so forth and so on, and the traffic hub there, and cut up and then cross over to 89A and come up. It would actually be a good diversion and cut down. Well, you've seen what happens to 179. You've said that we don't need new roads. We need better management of roads. What would that mean?
Yes. Well, it can mean a number of things, and we need to look very closely at it. You mentioned Sedona. You know yourself that they're involved in looking at how to have a transit system that makes sense. And there are any number of ways to do that. And I'm not going to sit here today and say, I have the answer, because we're going to have to do a lot more diligence to get the right answer that's the best fit. But for sure, what we know about the Verde Connect is it doesn't mitigate the traffic that, is suggested that it will. It's going to dump 4,500 cars on Middle Verde Road. And if you've not been on Middle Verde Road, let me for just a second describe it. It is a rural road with no shoulders. It is very dangerous to imagine that 4,500 cars are now going to be on that road in a farming community of about 200 people there. And what I understand is that it's going to get people to the bottleneck in Sedona about 7 minutes faster, and it's going to really impact negatively Cornville Road.
Well, we kind of run out of time, Donna. You have a website that people can go on for all your positions and, yes, and stuff. Why don't you give us the address
Thank
for that?
Thank you for reminding me. I'm just terrible about that. It's DonnaForDistrict3.com, and you can find me on social media. I urge you to do that. I talk about my governing philosophy, my position statements, and here's what's important to remember about why I'm doing this, and it was an early question. I love this Verde Valley. It's taught me, my education began during my PhD, but after my PhD here, learning more about rural Arizona than I ever could have imagined. We are the Verde Valley. I want to protect it.
Mike, we have some announcements in the last few minutes of the show.
You bet.
To get everything in, right, Mike?
You bet. You can go to Donna Michaels, candidate for Yavapai County Supervisor, District 3. You can find out how she feels about Primrose Peak Estates and Spring Creek Ranch and lots of other things, either by standing outside the door of the studio and catching her on her way to her car, or going to her website, which is probably much more efficient. We want to talk about today is the last day to register to vote. Today is it. If you want to update your registration, if you need to register, you can still do it. It's really, really, really simple. Go to My Arizona Vote or go to Service Arizona, and you can update your registration. You can make sure you're registered. A lot of people are, I don't want to say a lot, some people are finding out that they thought they were registered and they're not. Check your registration. It's not too late to register to vote for the November 3rd election, My Arizona Vote or Service Arizona.
It's so easy now.
If you're going to be out of the area, Peeville, and you register for the permanent early voting list, they're not going to send it to you. So you have to call the recorder, call the elections office, and get a different kind of ballot. So just because you registered for the permanent early voting list, which is certainly what a lot of the organizations push, we also want to mention that there was a huge get-out-the-vote effort. When I was leader of a political organization, I would stand on a desk and yell at people and tell them, you have one stinking job, one only, no matter what political, you got one job, and that's to get your party to vote. It's that simple.
Ballots are coming
out.
They
have people doing that. They have. You can go, once again, to our website, Democratic Perspective. You can go to my Facebook page. You can go to Democratic Perspective Facebook and see all the links. They got an event every day this week for Coral Evans, for Felicia French, to get out the LD6 vote. They got some really painless ways you can do this. If canvassing scares the crap out of you like it does me, they got lots of other stuff that you can do. So we're talking about we have signs. We got Biden signs. We got Felicia French. We got LD6 signs. We got all kinds of signs in Cottonwood, in Sedona, in Prescott. You can pick up signs. We've distributed the signs everywhere. So please, please, please get to an office. Get to somebody you know in the party.
The DOOR website, too, is really good, Mike.
The DOOR website. Excellent. Yes, we want to thank our big supporters here on Democratic Perspective. Democrats of the Red Rocks has all this
information. Yavapai Party.
Has all this information. Please, please, please pick up the signs. Please get involved in the LD6 Get Out the Vote campaign. This is the kind of thing that makes the difference. Everything else until now, quite frankly, is, you know, meh, meh. We, okay, folks, we got thank you. Don't forget, this show and all our shows are on VVID, Verde Valley Independent Democrats, .org. You can find us. Thanks. See you next time.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.